So if you will excuse me, I will stop now. Your old friend and teacher, Joseph H. Salyards. 319, January 28, 1916. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well, dear, the influences have not been good tonight, and many dark spirits have been present. The one who wrote was very dark and brought with him others who were all anxious to write. But White Eagle would not let them write, although he did not force them to leave. I desired to write, as I told you last night, but under the conditions did not think it best to try to do so. I will try tomorrow night, and hope you will be in condition. I will not write more now, as it is best not to draw on you. So love me and believe that I love you and am with you very much, trying to help you. Do not forget to pray more and more often to the Father for his love. Your own true and loving, Helen. February 3, 1916. I am here, Luke. I come tonight to say a few words concerning the great truth of the development of the soul in its natural love, wherein the new birth is never experienced. I know that men think that this natural love has in it a part of the divinity of the Father's nature, and that as they develop in the way of purifying it and ridding it of those things which tend to impair its harmony, they will realize that there exists in their souls this divinity of which we have written. But this is not true, for this natural love partakes only of those elements which the Father implanted in it at the time of man's creation, and in none of these elements is any of the qualities of the divine nature. It is difficult to explain just the distinction between the divine love coming from the Father, and the natural love also coming from him, and yet, not having any of the divine nature or qualities, but it is a fact. The natural love may become so purified that it may come into perfect harmony with the laws governing its condition and composition, and yet, fall far short of having in it any of the divine love. And so, as we have explained to you, the soul may obtain this divine love and thereby become a part of the Father's divinity. I will now try to explain how the natural love of man may be developed, so that his soul may come into harmony with the law of love, the natural love, and make him a very happy, pure and contented being. The Paget Messages 1916. In the first place, I wish to say that there is no such thing in the world as original sin or evil, and that God did not create them or permit them to exist, except as he permits man to use his own will without limitation, and I mean by this that he does not say that a man, in the exercise of this will, shall do this or do that, and as respects this will, man is untrammeled. But God does say, and his laws are inexorable in this particular, that man, when in the exercise of the great power of free will, causes that will to come into conflict with the will of God, or to violate his laws, he, man, must suffer the consequences. This may be illustrated by your natural laws declaring the freedom of the press. Man may publish whatsoever he pleases, and so long as he does not thereby violate the rights of others, or of decency, he may make his publications without fear of the law. But when in the exercise of this freedom of speech, as you call it, he violates the law, and then he must suffer the consequences of this violation. So it is with the mortal who, in the exercise of his free will, violates the will of the Father, or the laws limiting its exercise by the mortal. He must suffer the consequences, and, from, the results of this violation are sin and evil created, and in no other way. And surprising as it may sound to you, man is the creator of sin and evil, and not God, who is only good. Then the question arises, how can sin and evil be eradicated from the world? And every thoughtful man will have the same answer. And that is, by man ceasing to violate the will of God, or his laws, which restrict the exercise of the wills of mortals to that which, in its right exercise, will not produce sin or evil. In other words, when men by the wrong use of their wills bring about inharmony, they can by the right use of their wills not disturb that harmony, which when it exists, leaves no room for the presence of sin and error. So you see, the one thing necessary in order for men to become happy and free from everything that defiles them, or causes unhappiness or discord to exist, is to develop their souls in this natural love, until this love comes into perfect unison with the laws that control it. And thus may be applied the oft-quoted expression that love is the fulfilling of the law, But this means love in its purest and most perfect state. Now, how can this development of the natural love be accomplished by men? The mind, while a powerful helper in this regard, is not of itself sufficient to bring about this great desideratum. It is true that with every mortal 320, there is a constant warfare between the appetites and lusts of the flesh, and his higher desires, and hence it is said, that these appetites and desires are sinful, and the cause of evil and the inharmony that exists in the lives of mortals. But this statement is not altogether true, for as man was made with spiritual aspirations and desires, so also was he made with appetites and desires of the flesh, and the latter of themselves are not evils. The failure to make the distinction between the fact that these appetites and desires of the flesh are not evil, and the fact that only the perversion of them brings evil, is the great stumbling block that stands in the way of man's developing this natural love in the manner that I have indicated. These, what are sometimes called the animal appetites and desires, may be exercised in such a way as to be in perfect harmony with the laws that control them, and in such exercise not interfere with or prevent the development of this natural love to perfection. But man, in the free exercise of his will, has in his wanderings gone beyond the limitations which the law of harmony has placed upon him, added to and increased and distorted the appetites and desires of the flesh which were originally bestowed upon him, and, hence, has himself created those things that are not in harmony with the creation of himself. So you see, man is a creator as well as a creature. As the latter, he cannot alter or change any of the effects of his creation. But as the former, he can alter and change and even abolish the effects of his own creation, for as the creator, he is greater than the things that he created, although these things of his own creation have held him in bondage and unhappiness, to a more or less extent, ever since he became their creator. The strength of this apparent paradox is that the creator, man, has for all these long centuries believed it, and submitted to his creations, and still does so. So what is the remedy? Simply this: man must awaken to the fact that he is greater than his creatures, that they are subject to his will, and that whenever, by their existence and workings, they bring discord and unhappiness, and cause his will to be exercised in opposition to the will of the Father, then they must be destroyed, and never be permitted to come into existence again. Let men become the masters of their creatures, creations, and obedient to the great will of their Creator, and they will realize that sin and error and unhappiness will disappear, and their natural love will come into harmony with the laws of its creation, and earth will indeed become a, the Paget Messages 1916, heaven, and the brotherhood of man established on earth. If men will only think, and thinking, believe that all sin and error and the resulting unhappiness and sorrow in the world are children of their own creation, and not the children of God, and that in the economy of his universe he leaves the control and management and even the existence of these children to the will of their parents, they will, then, understand why evil exists, why wars and hatred and misery continue on earth to blight the lives and happiness of mortals, and why, as some say, and especially the so-called Christians, God permits all these things to exist and flourish and apparently contradict the great truth, that he is good, and the fountainhead of all goodness. The universe and the inhabitants thereof in the greatest production of his power, man, were all created by God. But sin and error and their awful followings are the creatures, creations, of man. The laws of his universe work in harmony, and all is good. And even the apparent inharmony which man has created does not affect that great harmony, but is confined in its workings to man himself. Only man is apparently in inharmony, and that is caused by man himself. Suppose, for a moment, that man's will was working in accord with that of the Father, can you imagine that there would be any of these creatures of man's perverted will in existence? Would there be any evil or hatred or disease or suffering known to the consciousness of man? I tell you, no. Now I say man, their creator, must destroy these inharmonious creatures. Man must kill and bury deep and forever these children of the perverted exercise of his will, and until then, sin and error and all their concomitants will continue to live and flourish and torment their creator, man. And I say here with all emphasis and with a full realization of the great significance and responsibility in the sight of God which I assume in saying it, that man can destroy these bastard creatures of his will so perverted and discordant. His natural love, if permitted to assert its God-given powers and functions, is sufficient to bring his will in accord with that of the Father, and turn his thoughts away from these children of his, and to make him conscious of purity and truth. The dead desires and dead appetites will bury their dead children, and man will come into his own again. But then comes the question, how is man to accomplish this great end, so devoutly to be wished for? Well, it is late now, and I will write upon this important feature of this development of his natural love in my next message. So with all my love I will say good night. Your brother in Christ, Luke. February 5, 1916. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well, dear, I see that you do not feel like writing much tonight, and will say only a few words. The Master was anxious to finish his message, but he saw your condition and was not displeased that you did not write. But get in condition by tomorrow night. Well, I have been with you today at your office, and also at church, and was loving you with all my heart and soul, and tried to make you feel my presence and love. I think if you soon go to bed you will feel better in the morning. Well, I will do so, and tomorrow night he will come and tell you what is best for you to take. While he has not written you for a long time yet he is with you quite often looking after you. I will tell him your desire and I know that he will do what is best. So sweetheart, keep up your courage and faith and pray, and you will be happier and realize your desires. Good night, my own dear husband. Your own true and loving, Helen. February 6, 1916. I am here, Jesus. I come tonight to resume my discourse of several nights ago. As I was saying, man is the creature of God, made in perfection and instantaneously, as it were, not having a slow growth, as other creations, and when he was created he needed no evolution or additional attributes to make him the perfect man. His physical body was perfect, and also his spiritual body and his soul. He had, in addition to these three constituents, a gift which, by his disobedience, he forfeited, and which was never restored to him until my coming, and which when possessed by him made him more than mere man. As to those things which were made constituent and absolute parts of him, they were perfect, and no evolution was necessary to give them any increased perfection. Man then was a more perfect being than he is now, or ever has been since his fall from his condition of perfection. After his disobedience and the consequent death of the potentiality or partaking of the divine 321, the Paget Messages 1916, Nature of the Father, which is the gift above mentioned, man was left in a state where he depended exclusively upon the qualities which he then possessed for his future happiness, and freedom from those things which would cause him to lose the harmony that then existed between him and the laws governing his being. The greatest of all the qualities bestowed upon him was that of the will power, which was wholly unrestricted in its operations. Although, when exercised in a manner which brought this will in conflict with the laws controlling this harmony, man had to suffer and pay the penalties of such violations. But notwithstanding that these perversions of the exercise of the will brought the sins and errors which now exist on earth, God did not place any limitations on this exercise. Man, in his creation, had bestowed upon him appetites and desire pertaining to his physical nature, as well as desires of his higher or spiritual nature, and they were all intended to work in harmony and not in antagonism, and in such workings, man was kept pure and free from sin, which is merely the violation of God's laws of harmony. But after the first disobedience, which is the greatest demonstration of the power of man to exercise that will, even when God had forbade him to do so, and after man lost this great potentiality that I speak of, succeeding disobediences became easier, and as these disobediences occurred man lost to a great extent the desires for the spiritual things, and the animal or physical part of his nature asserted itself, and then, instead of exercising these appetites which belong to the physical nature in such a wise way that no inharmony would ensue, and here let me say that even after the fall it was possible and even expected that man would exercise these appetites in the way mentioned, he indulged them beyond their proper functions, and increased such indulgence, until he commenced to find, as he thought, more pleasure in such indulgence than in the thoughts and exercise of his higher nature, and the aspirations which belonged to it. This deterioration of man was not sudden, but gradual, until, at one time, he became in a state or condition of being bordering on that of the lower animals, and in fact because of this increased indulgence of these appetites he seemed to be transformed into the lower animal, but yet he remained man, a being created in the image of his Maker. And from this position of low degradation or degeneracy man slowly commenced to progress 322, towards the attainment of his original condition before the fall. Never in all this time, was his freedom of will taken from him, nor attempted to be controlled by God, but always the laws of compensation worked, and man suffered as he continued to create sin and evil. But as man on earth continued to degenerate and to permit what is sometimes called his animal nature to dominate his spiritual nature, many men died, and continued to die, and their physical bodies went back to the dust of which they were created, and their spiritual selves became inhabitants of the spirit world, where they were freed, in a longer or shorter time, from the desire to exercise these animal appetites, and the spiritual part of man again asserted itself, until many of these spirits became free from sin and evil and in harmony with the laws of God, controlling their natures and conditions as they existed before their degeneracy and before the disobedience commenced. And these spirits thus made free and in their spiritual dominance commenced to try to assist men while living on earth to direct his will in such ways as to rid himself of submission to these appetites, and to become again a true man as in his creation state, minus the potentiality that I have mentioned. But these efforts on the part of spirits have been slow in their effects, and while men in individual cases have been almost regenerated, yet as whole the progress has not been as rapid as is desirable. Sin and evil still exist in the world, and men's perverted appetites and desires still control them to a large extent. Of course, this progress from the bottom of degeneracy has taken place in some parts of the earth, faster than in others, and, hence, you have your distinction between the civilized and the uncivilized races or nations. But this does not necessarily mean that the civilized people, as individuals, have made greater progress in the manner indicated, than have the individuals of some of the so-called uncivilized nations, for it is a fact, that among some men of the former nations are perversions and manifestations of perversions of these appetites that do not exist in the latter nations. Advancement in the intellectual qualities do not necessarily mean progress in the spiritual asserting itself over the perversions of these appetites, for will is not a thing entirely of the mind, and neither are these appetites and desires, because back of the mind are the affections usually called the heart's desires, which is the seat of these, the Paget Messages 1916, appetites, and from which these desires arise, and as they arise the will is influenced by them, and as the will is influenced come positive thoughts and deeds. It is not surprising that your scientists believe and preach the doctrine of the evolution of man from a lower species of animal, or from an atom or from something that they cannot just understand or give a name to, because in their studies of the history of mankind, and of the created world, they find that man has developed and progressed amazingly from what appeared to have been his condition in some ages past. But history does not extend to the time when man was in this lowest condition of degeneracy, and hence all the conclusions that these scientists reach are based upon facts, sufficient unto themselves, which show the progress of man only after the turning point of his degeneracy. They have no fact, and, of course, when the word facts is here used, it refers exclusively to the material things of nature, showing them the gradual decline of man from his state of being a perfect man to that when his retrogression or degeneracy ceased, and his progress of return to his former estate commenced. So, if the scientists will believe and teach that man, instead of evolving from an atom or some other infinitesimal something, or from a lower species of animal than man, evolved from his state or condition when he was at the bottom of his degeneracy, to which he had descended from the perfect man, then they will believe and teach the truth, and their theory of evolution will then have as its foundation or basis a fact, which now it has not, only a speculation. This, in short, is the history and truth of the creation of the universe of man, of man's fall and degeneracy, and evolution and progress. And through all this creation and subsequent existence, runs life, permeating it and always with it, and the origin of life is God. I have finished, and I hope that you will find some instruction as well as entertainment in what I have written. I will come again soon and write you another truth. The fact that you waited for sentences to be formulated to express my thoughts, merely means that I was manipulating your brain so that the proper expression or idea could be conveyed to your hand as I wrote it. You have my love and blessings, and I am more interested as time passes in you and your work. Keep up your courage and your desires will be fulfilled. 323, Your friend and brother, Jesus. February 8, 1916. I am here, St. Paul, of the New Testament. I desire to continue my message tonight. As I said in closing my last writing, there is a resurrection that is vital to the salvation of men, which Jesus taught, and which after the death of his followers and believers of the early centuries, the knowledge of was lost to the world and to those who assumed to teach the doctrines of the resurrection that he came to declare and teach. You and all mankind must know that the resurrection, which is the foundation stone of Christianity, is a resurrection from the dead and not from the mere existence of a man as a spirit in the physical body on earth, and not as a resurrection of the soul from its environments and limitations that the earth life placed upon it. Then what is the resurrection that Jesus referred to when he said, "I am the resurrection and the life"? Now, in order to understand this resurrection, it is necessary to understand what is meant by the death of man, that is the real man, the ego, that part of him in which the breath of life exists, no matter whether he is of the physical or the spiritual. As has been explained to you elsewhere, when man was created, his creation was of the physical body, the spiritual body and the soul, and in addition, and the addition was the most important part of his creation, the potentiality of becoming so at one with the Father in his nature and certain of his attributes, that he, man, would become so possessed of some of the divine essence of the Father and a portion of his divinity that would cause him to be immortal, so that death could never deprive him of his existence, and not only that, but he would realize the consciousness of his immortality. This potentiality then was a part of his creation, and, as we have explained elsewhere, the only part of his creation that died as the result of his disobedience, for it is very apparent from the mere knowledge that man has, or may have, from the ordinary investigation of the qualities of his being, and from the truths of psychical research of modern days, as well as from the understanding of the many instances related in the Bible of the appearance of departed spirits on earth and the manifestations of their existence, and also from the many occurrences of the appearances of spirits, the Paget Messages 1916, related in what is called secular history, that the soul and spirit body of man never died, and that his physical body lived for many years after the day on which the sentence, because of his disobedience, announced that he should die. And as I have said, this mortal body not man, the man, but merely the vesture of covering for the real man. This potentiality then being the only part of the created man that died, and as Jesus' mission was to teach the resurrection of man from the dead, it necessarily follows that the only thing that was intended to be resurrected was this potentiality of becoming a part of God's divinity. This is the only real and true resurrection, and upon this resurrection must rest the faith and truth of Christianity. And by Christianity I mean religion which is based upon the true teachings of Jesus, the Christ. There are contained in the Bible some things which, if properly understood, would show to man that no resurrection of the body was intended as the thing which Jesus came to earth to declare and teach. When he said, "I am the resurrection and the life," he did not say or mean, "Wait until I die and then I will become the resurrection," or "When you see me ascend to heaven, then will I become the resurrection and you will know it," but his declarations not only in the instance mentioned, but at all times were that he was the resurrection while living. And these declarations did not refer to the man Jesus, or to any disposition that he might make of his body, either physical or spiritual, or to any apparent ascension of his physical body, which never took place, or to any ascension of his spiritual body which did occur. In these particulars he was essentially no more or different from other men that had died or should die. But the meaning of his saying and his mission were, that as by man's disobedience there had occurred the death of the possibility of his becoming at one with the Father and partaking of his divine nature, and as that possibility had never been restored to man in all the intervening years, and man had remained in this condition of death during all the long centuries, if man would only believe in him as the true Christ and in his teachings as to the re-bestowal of this great privilege of again becoming at one with the Father and of obtaining immortality, and would follow his advice as to the way in which man could realize the benefits of this great privilege, then he would become conscious that Jesus was the resurrection from the dead, not Jesus the man or teacher or the 324, chosen and anointed one of the Father, but Jesus the impersonation of the truths which he proclaimed as to the re-bestowal of the great gift. Only in this way was Jesus the resurrection and the life. He, himself, had received the great gift and realized his atonement and the consciousness of his immortality and the possession of the divine nature, and knew that he had been lifted from death into life, and, therefore, if men would believe his teachings as to the resurrection, these teachings and not the man Jesus or even the fact that he had been resurrected, would draw all men unto him, that is, into the condition of life and consciousness that he possessed. Then the resurrection that Jesus promised to man was the resurrection of this great potentiality which he had lost at the time of the first disobedience and which had never been restored until the coming of Jesus. Now let it not be misunderstood as to what was meant by this resurrection. As I have said, after men were deprived of this potentiality they were in a condition of death and it was not possible for them to get out of this condition. They were possessed of only what is called their natural love without any possibility of obtaining the divine love which was necessary in order to give them any portion of the divine nature and a consciousness of immortality. When the great potentiality, which was as to them as if it had never existed, was re-bestowed, then men were again placed in the position of the first man before his fall, and were no longer actually dead, but were possessed of this potentiality to become that which had been forfeited by the first parents. But as we have told you, the gift of this potentiality was not of itself the bestowal upon man of those qualities which such potentiality merely made it possible for them to acquire by aspiration and effort. Before this re-bestowal men could not by any aspirations or efforts on their part obtain the conditions and qualities which this potentiality made possible, no matter how great the effort might be, as to them men were simply and absolutely dead. After the re-bestowal, the impossibility which this death had imposed was removed, and then men received, not the full fruition of what was possible to obtain because of such re-bestowal, but the privilege of arising from death to life, of the resurrection from death to the glories of immortal life. And while this privilege had become a part of man's possession, yet, if he had remained without consciousness of that fact, the Paget Messages 1916, he would, in effect, have remained in his condition of death and have never received the benefit of the re-bestowal of the great gift. So to reveal to man the vital truth Jesus taught and demonstrated in his own life, the possession of those qualities that became his because of the existence of the gift. And he also taught while men had the privilege spoken of, yet, unless they sought for and prayed the Father in sincerity for the gift of his divine love, the potentiality which had been bestowed upon them would not bring to them the resurrection from the dead, and they would continue in their lives as mortals and as inhabitants of the spirit world, as if they were still under the doom of death. I may here state that this potentiality, which was lost by the disobedience of the first parents and was re-bestowed by the Father and revealed by Jesus to mankind, was the privilege of receiving and possessing the divine love of the Father, which, when possessed, would give to man certain qualities of divinity and immortality. So the resurrection from the dead that the Master taught and which is the one foundation of the Christian faith, arise from the fact that God re-bestowed upon mankind the privilege of seeking for and receiving his divine love which would make the mortal one with him an immortal, and upon the further fact that man must, in order to obtain the resurrection, seek and find this divine love and thereby become a child of the true resurrection, a resurrection that was never known to prophet or seer or reformer or teachers of faiths, no matter how excellent their moral teachings and private lives may have been, before the coming of Jesus.